welcome back to another 3 hours of Mind Food, coast to coast and around the world live on the internet. I'm Jeff Rentz, and tonight the latest on the growing body of evidence that suggests using cell phones can cause everything from a loss of clear thinking to brain tumors. But first up this evening, a return visit with Richard Sauder, PhD, who has produced one of the most unusual books of the year, entitled Kundalini Tales. Coming up next. Many of you may say, well, didn't we just hear Richard Sauder? Yes, it was just a couple of weeks ago that Richard was here and told us all about his magnificent 750-page epic report on secret underground tunnels and bases called The Sauder Report, Notes from the Underground, about which you can still get information by going to my homepage, just looking for that banner with the underground tunnel on it and clicking on it. It's all right there. And coincidentally, his other brand-new book is just out. It is called, as I said, Kundalini Tales. And let me read just from the back cover to make it easier, because the language here is quite clear and tells us what it's all about. In this page-turning follow-up to underground bases and tunnels, what is the government trying to hide, which was the name of Richard's first book on underground tunnels, Dr. Richard Sauder, PhD, details significant personal episodes of spontaneous spiritual awakening, out-of-body journeys, encounters with secret governmental powers, unambiguous daylight sightings of UFOs, highlights from his two trips to prison for performing nonviolent civil disobedience against nuclear weaponry during the Reagan years, and provocative research about the occult underpinnings of the U.S. space program. A breakthrough portion of the book focuses on reproductions of and commentary on actual, and you can see them in the book, U.S. patents that have been granted for technology that makes possible mind and thought manipulations from remote distance. It's right here in the book. So convincing is Sauder's treatment of this topic that electronic machinery must now be added to temporal lobe disorder and psychosis as possible causes for voices in the head. And how many of us have heard people or heard stories about folks that claim they hear voices in their heads, all too often tragically connected with crimes of great violence? People talk about, well, the suspect said he heard voices telling him to do this or that. Well, in some cases, there may be enough data in this book to convince you that in reality that may have been the case. Richard, are you there?
Right here, Jeff.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Just rolling right along. Great book. Great-looking cover. And Whitley Strieber wrote the endorsement on the front cover. Let me read that to all of our listeners as well. From Whitley, Kundalini Tales is a profound and fascinating journey into the deep of the mind, the soul, and the hidden realities that have formed our very world. Richard Sauder has a way of getting under the skin, of adventuring into places that most of us hardly notice and would never dare go. Thus, this is a compelling journey, must reading for anyone who wants to explore the secrets behind and beneath human life and the human world, end quote, Whitley Strieber. That's very nice.
Yes, it is. Whitley likes my writing, and I must say I've read quite a number of his books, and I like his writing as well. So we're mutual admirers, I suppose, of each other's writing.
Well, it's very nice. This is a book that, as I said, easily one of the most interesting of the year. It is sort of a compendium of experiences. You have led a very interesting life, my friend.
Yeah, you know, I was reflecting on that, of course, as I was putting the book together. It has been a very interesting and unusual life, and I'm not sure why that is. I think that what I do as I go along is I notice, if for want of better words, the seams in reality, the cracks in reality, the places where our consensual reality construct is stitched together, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice the places where the stitches are frayed or where they're unraveled or where the stitching is supposed to go, but someone or something has, for whatever reason, just forgotten to place it in at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And for, I don't know why, but I am prone to notice those seams, if you will, as I go along. And when you're predisposed to do that, it makes you stumble into a lot of very interesting adventures, I guarantee it.
Oh, indeed. And, of course, 99%+ of the populace is too busy or otherwise occupied to really slow down and see those seams, and they are fascinating. And you can see them in human character. You can see them in the societal mechanism, such as it is. You can see them everywhere if you get to that mindset where you can be truly an observer.
Yeah, you know, something comes to mind that if for your listeners who've read the Carlos Castaneda books, on one occasion Don Juan Matus was giving Carlos Castaneda some instruction, and without regard to whether or not a character such as Don Juan ever objectively existed or not, I found his advice interesting in this case.
Mm-hmm.
He told Carlos that when he's trying to enter into non-ordinary states of awareness, that he should engage in a series of not doing exercises. And one of the things he recommended was to lay down beneath a shade tree on a sunny day and look up through the branches and through the boughs of the tree, but to not focus on the leaves, rather to focus on the shadows between the leaves. Now, when we look at trees or anything else, we tend to look at the object itself rather than the shadow that it casts, or the pattern of shadows that a being, a living entity such as a tree, will create. But in doing that, in simply shifting your perception a little bit, you can open yourself up to a whole suite of novel experiences that are there all the time. We just don't notice them.
It's true, and it's, in a way, it's sad that we go through life missing so very much, because we get into a routine, we see, we reflexively respond to visual stimuli and take it no further. It's almost like seeing someone standing there all the time but not being aware of a breath going in and out of them, which is what's making it all possible. It's very interesting.
Exactly. I one of the things that I wanted to do in Kundalini Tales was simply to cast back through the years of my life and try to piece together a sort of grammar of my individual human being. Can you see what I'm saying? I was trying to find a common thread in my experience, my life experience, and my perception of it that would help me to make some sense out of what it means to be Richard Souter. And in doing that, hopefully to be able to understand in some better degree what all of this means for all of us, not just for Richard Souter, but the whole shebang, the whole thing that's going on the planet Earth. And, you know, Jeff, I think I did make some headway in that project. There is value for me or for anyone else in sitting down and just looking back over your life, or parts of it at any rate, recollecting things, setting them down, and trying to make sense of it all.
And well said, this book is almost a template for anyone who would choose to engage in that endeavor, and not to look back on your life with lament, but to look back on your life, as I think you're saying, Richard, seeing the seams of it all.
Yes, the seams of it all, and the wonder of it all, to look at it and say, you know, I'll be damned if I know what all this means. But isn't it wonderful? Isn't it mysterious? Isn't it so curious and intriguing? And by the way, I can't wait to find out what's going to happen next.
Isn't that fun? That's right. What's next? That's right. Exactly. Without forgetting what's behind, which we all tend to do. We're so caught up in the moment in this crazy society, and it seems a lot of it to be by design, quite frankly, but we can talk about that later. Richard Stauder, by the way, in case you don't know, is a student of life and consciousness. He holds a B.A. in sociology, an M.A. in Latin American studies, an M.S. in forestry, and a Ph.D. in political science. Talk about a solid background. That is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And there are more degrees I would like to complete. I would love to go and study applied mathematics, and I'd also like to study more chemistry, especially organic chemistry and biochemistry. I'd love to study some genetics and cell biology.
Well, we're getting into nanotechnology now, too,
exactly.
As being a viable area to explore, and what an incredible thing that is. And for those of you who don't know what nanotechnology is, I'm putting a story about that on the website tonight, I believe. It should go up. It has to do with literally creating things from atomic-sized building blocks, anything you want, by using tools that are down at the atomic level and even smaller. I mean, it's amazing.
It is. And what I find so amazing and intriguing about this period in the Earth's history is that we are moving very rapidly into a new world order that will have even a greater impact on us as a species than the past 500 years have. And we have yet to comprehend the technologies that are being developed. The impact is just going to be astonishing.
True. And we'll be right back with Richard Stauder in just a couple minutes. The new book is Kundalini Tales. Welcome back. Richard Stauder, my guest, and we're talking about his new book, Kundalini Tales. Again, one of the most unique books of the year, without doubt. I have told you what Whitley Strieber said about the book. There is another endorsement on the back. Let me just give it to you real quickly. Kundalini Tales is a spellbinding account of one man's extraordinary psychic experience. Richard Stauder's clean narrative style draws the reader directly into the events. This book is impossible to put down. At the same time, it is a serious chronicle of a remarkable metaphysical journey, so said Shelley Thompson, president of San Francisco Tesla Society. My father wrote a poem once, and it was entitled simply, "I Am Archaeologist to Me." And in a way, that's what this book is about.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting that you use the word me. All of us, when we talk about ourselves, use the word me. It's as if there is a me that has 6 billion different individual selves. Or maybe you could think of it as a huge me with 6 billion individual cells. And I've been pondering that. You know, here we're back to the seams in language. If you think about it, we all use exactly the same word to refer to ourselves. And maybe we're reflecting a very profound metaphysical truth in that maybe in some sense we really are all the same person having this wonderful communal dream which by spells is dreadful and terrible and violent and awful, and by spells on the other hand sublime and wonderful and joyful. And maybe at some time there's going to be a cosmic clap of the hands and we awaken either individually or all together to realize that we are all just one. And we were dreaming and thought that we were different.
It has been made time and again clear by people like Dean Radin and others that in all likelihood we are looking at the potential of one consciousness. We're not all connected to it. We are the consciousness.
Well, you know, one of my degrees is in forestry, and during the course of my forestry studies, I did some work in ecology and studying living systems, which are enormously complex. And one of the things that you quickly learn is that in living systems, be they forests, deserts, marshes, swamps, etc., it's very hard to distinguish where one organism ends and another begins.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great fabric of life, put it that way, the warp and woof of which is comprised of billions and in the aggregate trillions of different organisms whose existence is so interlocked one with the other that really it is impossible to determine with precision where one ends and the other begins. We are, in the most intimate ways, linked together with each other. We always have been, we are now, and always will be. And one of the terrible things that our culture does is to atomize us, to separate us one from the other, set us at each other's throats, literally.
That's the game of control.
Yes, and make us forget how close related we are to each other. And really, we are... I think we could profitably think of ourselves as one family. One family of living organisms on this planet, or thinking of all life forms in general, or in specific, one family of humans looking only at the human species. But for some reason, we have this terrible problem of dysfunctionality that causes us to act out in so many different ways that are counterproductive. And for the life of me, I don't know how we get through that. We're all caught up in it. Jeff Retz is, Richard Souter is, and I dare say virtually everyone listening to this program is. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we get out of this terrible dysfunctional mess that we've gotten ourselves into? I don't have a lot of answers, but I have some interesting stories to tell along the way. And maybe, just maybe, by telling each other our stories, we can come to grips with our shared humanity and make some headway towards a brighter future.
That's what legitimate recorded history is supposed to endeavor to do. But your point about the lack of real demarcation between the species and the ecosystems is very good. Our egos are what causes the problem, and greed is the caretaker of ego, and leads us into such darkness at times. It's historic. I don't know of any other species on the planet that can look at such waste that they leave behind themselves. The reciprocity of interdependence is to be acknowledged and revered, not disgusted and disposed. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it is. I've been reflecting on that, and part and parcel of what is happening on this planet now is a depreciation of biological or life energy. We see it in so many different ways, in incessant war making. We see it in abortion. We see it in the felling of the rainforests.
Which are now said, Richard, to be tragically beyond saving.
I don't think that they can be saved. We see it in the fouling of the oceans. And for all of these things, there are excuses given, there are justifications given. You will find great political movements or great...
corporations.
Corporations, economic forces behind them. And yet the killing and the destruction and the slaughter go on and on and on. And I think the only antidote possibly can be love, which springs from the very heart of the universal creative impulse.
Richard Souter, my guest, the book Kundalini Tales. I'm Jeff Rentz, and we shall continue in a very few minutes. Okay, we are back, and the book Kundalini, a word not familiar to maybe all of you listening. It is spelled K-U-N-D-A-L-I-N-I. Richard, why Kundalini Tales?
Well, Kundalini Tales was a title that sort of evolved. I, as I said, began writing down some of my recollections, putting together a sort of a diary or journal, I suppose, during the time I was completing my degree in forestry. And several of the entries that I set down had to do with the Kundalini, the Kundalini energy, my experiences with it, and my reflections on it. So I happened to hit on the title of Kundalini Tales. I bounced it off a couple of people. They liked it, and so it stuck.
Why, it's an outstanding title.
Well, it reflects what I think the book is getting at, which is the energy that informs reality, the cosmic creative impulse, I think is perhaps best represented in the human realm by the Kundalini, which, by the way, people can experience consciously, and quite a few people do. One of the things I wanted to do with this book is to point out, hey, not how strange is Richard Souter's life, but how weird is this human reality we all share.
Yep.
Maybe what's a little different about me is not so much the experiences I have as that I have written them down so that other people can read them and think about them. I know from my own experience, from my own reading, from my own talking, from my own observation, that many of us are having all kinds of enchanting and mesmerizing experiences, whether on a lifelong basis or occasionally on an episodic basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, as you pointed out earlier, we're so caught up in the hustle and bustle of this material consumerism grind that's foisted on us by the global culture we have today, that we don't take note of these things. And if we do, we're too busy to talk about them with other people whom we fear would only ridicule us anyway, and Lord knows, too busy to sit down and write a lengthy diary or journal or, God forbid, an actual book for publication. So that was really my objective in writing this book and in giving it the title Kundalini Tales, to kind of broach this topic, throw it out there, and to say, hey, look at this. What about it? Isn't it awfully strange? And by the way, isn't it awfully interesting and wonderful?
And as the mass continues down the road to abject temporal gratification, there is a strata that is clearly engaging, being led, invited to, participating in a spiritual growth,
yeah,
a vibrational growth that I have never seen. And it is quite clear that there is a, if you will, a polarization going on, although the one pole may be in enlightenment terms on one end, but that great mass is still stuck somewhere in the middle. And they are pretty much enslaved to what the deal makers and the advertising executives and the Madison Avenue mind has created around them. And they voluntarily step into it.
Yeah. Well, we all do it to a certain extent. It's, you can't live in this culture and not do that.
That's part of the name of the game.
I want to bring out a point here that I feel is important. And that is, I in no way believe that spirituality or spiritual evolution is consonant at all with being a so-called religious person. And it's been my observation that in many cases religion can even be a monstrous impediment to spiritual advancement, because it forces people into a very rigid social, emotional, and mental straitjacket from which it is very hard to break loose, and in the confines of which it is difficult to make progress and grow.
Fear-based?
Yes. Now, I know that may shock a lot of people, yeah, but it's been my observation that in many cases, very religious people have very closed minds. And if you look back through history, you will see some of the most despicable atrocities, which just slaughtered and enslaved peoples by the millions were created and perpetrated by those who presented themselves as being more religious than anyone else. I'm thinking of the Inquisition of the Catholic Church, which went on for centuries and burned at the stake God knows how many millions of people, all for the sake of Jesus Christ, mind you.
Yeah, well, the Church is officially trying to come to terms with that, to lay that issue to rest.
Well, yes. Well, they'll have a hell of a hard time, pardon my French.
Yeah.
And look at the Crusades between the Muslims and the Christians, which, again, went on for centuries. And, well, history is just awash in the blood that religious people have shed.
History is written with blood for ink.
Yes, yes. And many... Or look at the religious wars of Europe, which went on for centuries with different factions.
Well, they're still going on. Look at
yes,
today.
Look in Ireland, yes.
What's new? I mean, nothing really is new. And by the way, during the times of the Romans, you know what the big debate was about? Abortion. Should you eat meat or not? The vegetarian constant conflict was going on back then.
Yeah. Well, from my personal standpoint, I feel that I was mentioning, and you were also mentioning the destruction of the rainforests that is rampant all over the world. The primary reason for rainforest destruction is to create pasturage for beef cattle, which will then be raised and slaughtered to produce beef that is frequently exported to wealthy countries such as the United States for consumption by the middle class. I have reached a point in my life, and I've been there for many years now, where I've understood the close connection between the violence of the meat production industry and the destruction that's taking place on many levels on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've given up eating meat. I heard it put this way by one vegetarian who said, don't eat anything with a face, and it'll be better for your face.
If it had a face or came from something with a face, don't eat it. Every time you eat something like that, you're contributing to more tree destruction, more defoliage of the countryside, which in many cases they say will never regrow.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. I think we are skidding downhill rapidly. There are many scientists that say we reached a point of no return long ago, over a decade ago. I'm not totally pessimistic, but if we're going to do something, we're going to have to do it pretty soon. Be right back with Richard Sauter. Your call is welcome here, 1-888 on radio. The book, Kundalini Tales, Richard Sauter, Ph.D. And talking to Richard Sauter, the whole idea, Richard, the debate of eating meat is so big and convoluted and multifaceted as to be nearly imponderable to the average consumer. I mean, let alone the poisons, pesticides, chemicals, hormones in the beef. Just forget that and talk about what you're talking about, the deforestation, the destruction of land. I'm sorry a lot of you people may be listening, love meat and all that, but we've done programs on this before, we will do again. There's a lot more to it than that. About 55% of each cow that is slaughtered in this country is not consumable, and that is a tremendous amount of poundage that has to be ground up into something, and most of it goes to what are called rendering plants, which put all these carcasses, dead horses, dead cows, roadkill, many dead dogs and cats. And they grind it all up and make it into things like pet food. And it's an incredible story, the idea of eating that much beef. I think it's two-thirds, almost, or nearly two-thirds of the antibiotics produced in America are fed to our farm animals. The idea of mutated organisms, of eating a little bit of antibiotics every time you eat farm-raised beef, not organically, but just normal farm animals that are raised in big agribusiness concerns. We're eating antibiotics all the time, and we're paying the price on that. Anyway, it's a big, big story, but your point is right. The forests are going. And what are they going for? Most of the cases in South America, they're going for cattle.
Yeah. And not only that, but in the process of cutting down the forest, of course, people who live there, who are frequently indigenous people, tend to fight back. And when they fight back, then you have an instant insurgency or insurrection, and then military forces are brought in to fight these people and slaughter them or drive them off the land so that agribusiness can come in and have the territory for beef production.
So some are suggesting that disease is being introduced into some of these indigenous tribes to get rid of them that way. Indians.
Yeah, this is nothing new, of course. Oh. That happened 200-300 years ago. The British were handing out smallpox-infested blankets to Indians in the Ohio Territory, if I recall my American history correctly. So this is an old game that we play with each other. We target one another for extinction, and we set about slaughtering by the hundreds of thousands, and millions. And we haven't got it right yet, Jeff, but, you know, just any century now, we'll get the killing perfected, and we'll get rid of the problem, people, and everything will be okay.
Right. The idea of Kundalini, you described it as almost a cosmic energy that some can experience that is potentially available to all of us. Describe Kundalini. Describe the sensation if you can. That's almost impossible to do, but...
It is. The Kundalini is something that is better experienced. And by the way, we all experience it. If you have breath in your body, then you have the Kundalini in your body, because it is the cosmic life-giving impulse. It is conscious. It is enchantingly, beguilingly conscious. It's playful. It's extremely powerful. I can best describe the effect of the Kundalini on me as saying that when it's active in me, it's simultaneously active in my body and in my consciousness. It has an air of mystery about it and tremendous excitement. It has an air of tremendous deliberate power. It has. It also evokes in you a sense of wonder, a sense of keen anticipation, as if something really tremendously important and exciting and stupendously revealing is just on the verge of happening, if you'll just hang on. It's better than the best ride at the state fair. It's just... I want to say it's something that I think every person can experience and should experience. It'll be unique in every case. It can manifest in so many different ways. The classic manifestation you read about in the literature is as a tremendous surge of energy, very electrical-like in nature, that comes coursing up the spinal column from the base of the spine and up into the head and even out of the head.
A Roman candle right up the back.
Oh, man, it's tremendous. You wouldn't believe it. It's beyond describing.
The ultimate rush.
It's the oh wow, far out, or maybe it's a far in experience. It's tremendously energizing. It's exciting beyond words. It is I don't know how to explain it.
It's
physical, I only know that it is.
Physical, it's physical and emotional, it's primal and spiritual, it's sort of all of the above. It's an intensification of the life feeling, the life force that just explodes all over the body, basically.
I think that's it. And it's when the Kundalini awakens in an individual, even partially, my feeling is it indicates that that individual is on the verge of moving up a quantum level in their functioning and in their presence as a human being. either on the cusp of doing that or in the process of doing that. And occasionally people do make the jump and move into an entirely new level of being, although they still are in a human body and walking around in society, but not or an ordinary person in the ways that ordinary society measures people. Hard to describe, hard to understand. It's something that some people do experience nonetheless. And many more people, and I'm one of those people, are tending in that direction and have episodic kundalini experiences and realize that it is possible to make a quantum leap to a new level of being while still being here on the earth, such that you think differently, your body works differently, your spirit has a different sort of what would be the proper word? Your spirit maybe has a different way of relating to itself and to others, or perceives itself in a different way.
Some people suggest that benign LSD experiences can give you a glimpse of that and sometimes trigger that, at least a mock kundalini sensation.
Yeah, maybe. I've never done LSD or any other hallucinogen. And I can't speak to that. In general, my advice would be not to toy around with hallucinogens.
We completely concur on that. Just I remember psychiatrists trying to evaluate it and describe it many years ago, and that was one of the things that one of them suggested. You mentioned in the book you had unambiguous UFO experiences.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I would add parenthetically here that when you begin to have an active kundalini, you will experience a wide range of anomalous events which don't fit neatly into ordinary consensual social reality. One of the things that may start happening to you is that you may begin to have UFO sightings. And it's certainly true in my case. I could describe the first really unambiguous and clear one that I had. It was early 1989, and I was living in Albuquerque at the time. I was in a small apartment in Northeast Heights of Albuquerque. I happened to look out my window towards the Sandia Mountains because I had noticed a rippling in the air over top of these mountains. I thought that was very peculiar. I had the impression the air itself was getting ready to part as if it were a curtain in an auditorium on a stage.
No clouds?
No clouds.
Mm-hmm.
As I was watching this rippling air, two jets scrambled out of Kirtland Air Force Base and flew through that area and exited the area. I was looking into the distance about 10 miles away. As soon as the Air Force jets cleared the area, I saw five spheres pop up in the air, different colors. There were two green ones, a red one, a black one, and one that was an iridescent color. And as I watched them, the black one suddenly disappeared. The others remained together in a formation, clustered together somewhat in the manner of balls on a pool table.
Hmm.
And they moved a few thousand feet up in the air. I watched them for about 20 minutes, and they went back and over the mountain range to the east. Very peculiar. They were good size. I would estimate for me to see them at that distance, they must have been at least 40 or 50 feet in diameter. They were not point source objects.
Mm-hmm.
I called the Air Force to report that sighting. And after being told that the Air Force no longer accepts UFO sightings, I was connected with an officer who proceeded to take down my UFO sighting in great detail. And that was my first unambiguous UFO sighting. I don't know what those objects were. My guess is that the Air Force was aware that they were there. Whence the scrambling of the two jets through the area where the object subsequently appeared.
Mm-hmm.
But people see a lot of spheres. I've seen other spheres subsequent to that on other occasions. But that was my first unambiguous UFO sighting. Not a flying saucer, mind you, but spheres.
Orbs,
very interesting.
Orbs and spheres are becoming more and more popular, as it were, being sighted all over the world by people. in countries everywhere.
Yeah,
all different sizes, little ones, grapefruit size, big ones.
Oh, I've seen them of all different sizes, too. These were quite large. I've seen them beach ball sized on two occasions. I don't know what to make of them. They may be little reality time bombs sent into this reality to work their magic.
Hard to know. If you find out, let me know, because they are being reported all over the place.
Still working on it.
Oh, yeah. We're going to pause and come back and talk to Richard. Kundalini Tales. We'll get some more of his stories. One of the most unique books, as I said, of the year. And Whitley Strieber's endorsement on the front is testimony enough. It is well worth reading. And we shall continue with Richard Sauter and much more. Don't forget the website, sightings.com. Lots of new material up there today. Some remarkable stories going up this evening as well, and we shall continue in about 7 minutes.